across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Monday, August 28th, 2023. National Bow Tie Day, National Cherry Turnover Day, National Power Rangers Day, National Red Wine Day, Kristen.
Yum!
So Kristen Lyerly is here, Selena Heller's here, and as they were both in the commercial break, and I just thought I'd do this like Marco Polo type of Pavlovian thing. So I just said very quietly, oh, it's National Red Wine Day, to see if either one was going to take the bait. Kristen right away, hello!
Well, then we Googled it and we came on some terms that said things like, can I have red wine for breakfast?
Yes.
Hey, I just got done bragging about having a foot long hot dog with fried onions for breakfast at the, you know, at the fair. So yes, if you want red wine for breakfast, you do you, boo-boo. That's that will work out just fine.
You do not need permission.
No, no. And trust me, if you're drinking red wine for breakfast, you're not asking anybody for permission. So. All right. Coming up this hour, at the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk about Waukesha schools in crisis on our Motherhood Monday segment, looking at what can happen when a quality school district becomes infected with politics. Now, when that happens, some things are eye-catching, like, you know, rejecting free school lunches for kids. Some things strike you as odd, like banning a song because it's about rainbows. But there are more troubling canaries in the coal mine, and they take the form of the teachers leaving the district because education is being supplemented or replaced by some right-wing indoctrination. So we'll talk to one of those teachers and also a couple of our friends from Motherhood for Good coming up later in this hour. And a reminder as well that over at the Up North News website, we've got t-shirts all about asking if you're up north right now or the definition of a bubbler or beer and cheese and voting rights. There's tote bags as well. So head to upnorthnewswi.com, click store in the top banner, and maybe get yourself some apparel for that. All right. As I mentioned, Selena Heller from Up North News is here putting together some stories for us. We heard from Sherita Booker in our last hour. Selena, this time, Selena and I have been working on a special edition of the Back to School newsletter. And I want to start first. Well, first, I'm going to play the Welcome Back Cotter theme just so I can again get that puzzled look in Selena's face because she's too young to remember 70s sitcoms, Aaron. Uh-huh. Our topic is alumni returning back to their home schools. Welcome back. Now, look, when Gabe Kaplan, portrayed Mr. Cotter in the 1970s, and went back, you know, to where he was, one of the sweat hogs in, it was Brooklyn, right? You know, that people thought that was kind of novel, but it does happen. Why were you raising your hand, Mr. or Ms. Lyerly?
Because I just wanted to say, ooh, Mr. Kreitlow.
Oh, you were being horseshack. Okay. Again, all of this lost on young Ms. Heller, who did a story about alums returning to their school districts to become teachers. And again, as often, we return to her stomping grounds of Jackson County. What'd you find?
Well, a lot of alumni returned to Black River Falls, and I knew that because I knew a lot of people thought it was a good area to be, and a lot of people are there, a lot of alumni. In fact, 61 of 295 staff members have graduated from Black River Falls, and they have gone back to become staff members, whether that be teachers or maintenance people or anything. So it's a really big number. The school district superintendent, Dr. Shelley Severson, kind of takes that number as a prideful thing and thinks that, you know, they love the district. They want to come back. They know the nuances in the district. So it's helpful to parents and kids because they know the backgrounds and the cultural aspects of the school district. So it's beneficial. And we know that the fact is two-thirds of new teachers still teach in Wisconsin after their first 5 years. So that means about a third of them don't. So retention is better for those people that come back to their own school districts because they want to be there. They choose the district and they know the area. So they're proud to become people that are making the difference in the families that they know and love.
This is really good news for the students of Kaukauna, Wisconsin, from future biology teacher Kristen Lyerly, who just doesn't know yet that she's heading back there someday.
No, you know, my childhood best friend is a school teacher in Kaukauna, and she is like Miss Kaukauna. Shout out to Marnie Sanderfoot, and so is her husband. And I see that in them. I see the pride that we had when we were in high school together and growing up in the public schools there. And I see how invested she and her kids are in the school district. It means a lot. This is community building at its finest.
It is. And it, again, when you're having trouble recruiting teachers and then retaining teachers, the more that you can get that are homegrown, the better. But our state leaders should by no means assume or take that for granted, because those same folks can just as easily at some point say, you know, things are different here and go someplace else. And so, Selena, I'm sure those folks, I hope they know how much they are appreciated in their hometowns.
Yeah, I think they do. I think they hear from parents a lot that, you know, appreciate the knowledge that they bring, the things, like I said, about the cultural aspects, the issues the town has faced.
Well, that too. But I mean, let's be clear. They also know, you know, where the kids are going to be making out when they cut class and know how to find them, you know, or all the other tricks of the trade. So there's nothing like having that kind of insider knowledge here. Let's take a break and we'll talk more with Selena about some of the back to school stories that we're working on, including letting the dogs. You know, the what's the cliche? The pools have gone to the dogs. Yeah. Never mind.
Something like that.
We'll cut that one out in post production. Back after this. You're up north. Oh wait, we're live? Florence Welch of Florence and the Machine was born in London this day in 1986, so happy 37th birthday, Florence. What a nice weekend all across Wisconsin, and it's time to see how things look as we get the work week started for us, and we will do that with Jennifer Vuchitsky from Weatherology, who joins us now to talk all about the state of Wisconsin forecast. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning and happy Monday. It looks like a pretty decent start to the work week here today. Sunny are becoming mostly sunny for most. A blend of clouds and sunshine develops around Emory and Baldwin in the afternoon hours, with a slight chance for showers and storms coming in around there in the late afternoon today. For Wisconsin Rapids in the western half of the state, looking at highs getting into the low to mid 80s, then Wausau down to Madison. And for the eastern half of the state, highs lingering in the upper 70s, which is actually pretty average for this time of the year. A potential for some rain coming in tonight for nearly everyone, with the highest chances around central Wisconsin. Tuesday looks like at least a slight chance for some showers and potentially some thunderstorms during the day. For Oshkosh, Waukesha, and Milwaukee, a slight chance for just the early morning hours. Madison up to central Wisconsin, then just a dry start to the day for western Wisconsin. Slightly cooler or pretty similar tomorrow, with highs in the mid-70s to right around about 80 for all, either at or slightly below average for this time of the year. Wednesday, sunny skies, the coolest day of this forecast here, as a cold front pushes through, mid to low 70s across the board, the coolest spot actually dropping into the upper 60s around Oshkosh. And then a warm front begins to push through for the second half of the work week, with sunny skies and warmer temperatures.
Those of us who have certain trees, like basswood trees, that are already starting to lose their leaves, it just kind of has that no, not yet feel to it. But it's not the real deal yet. But what is it? Meteorological fall starts this week, right?
That was on September 1st.
All right. Well, there we go. The clock keeps ticking. Good luck stopping it. Jennifer, thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too.
Let's do our 7 a.m. temps right now up here on Lake Wissota. It is 59 degrees on the way to a high of 82. Madison, 54, also going to be 82 for forecast high. 50 degrees in Waukesha, 79 will be the high today. La Crosse is at 58, en route to a high of 83. And Wausau, folks listening to Bull Falls Radio, 52 degrees right now on our way to a high of 78. Back with Up North News, Selena Heller and Dr. Kristen Lyerly. We were talking about back to school. There's going to be a special back to school edition of our newsletter. You can sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. And the cost of school supplies, yes, has definitely changed over the years. You know, when when Kristen was going to school, you know, all you really needed was your box of 64 crayons with a built-in sharpener. Do you remember the built-in sharpener?
Uh-huh.
You know,
oh, that was cool.
For me, it was just bring your little slab of granite and a piece of coal, and you would write on that. And
if you didn't say it, I was going to.
I know. That's why I got to jump on these things. And so what's it like now, Selena?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. We have a whole list, of course, you know, to go through. And even as little as kindergarten has that whole list. And I know a lot of schools like are able to supplement. Like when I talked to the superintendent, I said, what kinds of things do you need? Can I put something out there? Like, what do districts need? What do you need? And she's like, we have a lot of groups that actually supplement. So this year we didn't even have to have a big list for all the kids. But for many districts, that's not the case. So it was like the cost for students K through 12, $890.
What?
For kids. I don't think I did that, paid that much. So I don't know where they get that from. It's technology, I suppose, with all the technology. That's the big part. And clothes and school supplies, that accounts for all of that. And it said, like a report said, 40% of parents are planning to reuse supplies from last year.
Oh, sure. Kristen, mm-hmm. you had that with four boys, so I'm sure there was much recycling of supplies.
I have a large plastic box in my basement that has probably six packs of loose leaf and numerous other things.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I mean, they bring notebooks home at the end of the year and there's nothing in them. I tear out a couple pages, put it in the box, and they use it again next year. What are you going to do, toss it?
Mm-hmm. Last year after kindergarten, there were some glue sticks that, you know, came back. And Emery said, we can use these again next year. Aww. And I said, okay, that's a good idea. So we put all the stuff that we could use this year and we kept it. So we have to get a new backpack because that's the fun thing, you know, super fun to pick out a new backpack.
That was for our 9-year-old grandson. That was his thing this summer, was getting help. You know, he had a certain backpack that he wanted to get. And so we looked around for that. And that's the part that is, that personifies you in a way that a week or two ago, we talked about the old metal lunch boxes and what characters were on your lunchbox. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was it. There was also for me, the book covers that you made yourself out of grocery bags. You know, you'd cut up the grocery bag and you'd learn the little origami style, you know, to turn it into a book cover. And then or your trapper keeper.
Yeah, I was going to say,
who remembers the trapper keeper?
Lisa
or
Frank.
Or folders. The yes. folders, it would come out with all those cute little like kittens and things. Speaking of kittens, hi, Whiskers.
Whiskers is taking over Selena's video feed at this point. Yes.
So yeah, it was Lisa Frank for me with all the colorful cheetah prints and rainbows and all of that stuff.
Oh gosh, if you bring rainbow folders to Waukesha and some of these other school districts, will they like confiscate them? How is that going to work now? I don't know. I guess we'll find out in our next segment over here. So, hey, be careful with school supplies. Don't just check with your teacher. Check with, you know, who's sitting on your school board these days and see if they'll give you permission to be yourself when you're bringing your supplies to school.
That's reminding me of when I was in junior high, everybody had to have this T-shirt that was a rainbow T-shirt. And then it had little hearts falling off the end of it. And every girl had that T-shirt. That was like a necessary thing. I wonder how that would fly today.
Good question. So that's, again, something for our next half hour here. All right, we're getting near the end. We are in the week before Labor Day weekend. That's crazy. So weird. But here we are, which means, you know, a lot of communities that have, you know, municipal pools and things, they're going to be closing up. And I'm loving the new tradition that comes in some of these communities, Selena.
Yeah, on the hottest day of the year last week, the pool wasn't open to kids. The dogs. Dogs got to swim on the 100-degree heat day. So, yeah, on the last day of a lot of public pools closing, Chippewa and Eau Claire did this last week. And the dogs get to come and swim at the pool. And they have a lot of fun. We have some pictures up that are really fun of the dogs.
Oh, nice. I remember, you know, the first time I heard that, I thought, what is this? This is outrageous. And not that the pool is going to be reopened, but I thought, well, you know, the filters, you know, with all the fur and everything, but they're going to be cleaning it out anyway. So why not have a little bit of fun with it?
Exactly. And then I think one of the proceeds went to, you know, like a dog park. So it's kind of twofold fun and beneficial.
Sure. And I suppose it is it's discriminatory that Whiskers wouldn't be able to swim with the dogs?
I was thinking of that. You know, dogs like to swim, but and so they wouldn't consider cats, but Whiskers likes to be in the water. So he kind of gets left out. He would be fine just being in the water.
Whiskers is one of those very rare cats. And again, I think that's just from your daughter from a very early age, dragging that cat into the bathtub, you know, and
exactly.
those pictures you used to post of this, you know, drowned rat of a cat being held up. We're precious, but
yep, he just sits in there and just they hang out and they play.
Oh, that's so nice. And then we're going to end on a somewhat serious note here, but as we know, earlier this year, two officers were lost in the line of duty up in the Barron County area, and there's a new remembrance for them. Tell us about that, Selena.
Yeah, so in Barron County, in Rice Lake and Chetek, there are signs that memorialize these two officers. Chetek Officer Emily Breidenbach and Cameron Officer Hunter Scheel were killed in the line of duty in April. So these nice signs honor them and always will remember them as people come and go from those communities. So their friends and family gathered to unveil those signs. And it was just kind of a nice moment and to always remember them by.
It is nice. And I hope that, again, along with just not only the remembrances of these memorials, that people also consider, you know, various actions that they can take as well. And I'm speaking, again, to our elected leaders who can look at this. And, well, you know what? It was really illustrated well at the fair yesterday by a T-shirt where it had thoughts and prayers across the T-shirt and it was crossed out. And below it was policy and change. And wouldn't it be nice to see policy and change instead of thoughts and prayers so that things are a little safer for our law enforcement officers, for our schools, and you know, everything like that. That's, you know, Kristen, you and I talk about this all the time. That's the thing that makes the difference is after the memorials, after the signs, after the scholarships, all of those things are right and proper and serious. Mm-hmm. But then what do we do so it doesn't happen again?
Exactly. Driving through Chetek, it's really neat to see all of the blue ribbons that are on almost all of the signs as you drive through. But these are conversations that my partner, Craig, who's a police officer in Green Bay, and I have all the time. When we have had so many fallen police officers here in Wisconsin, unnecessarily, people who would be alive if we had appropriate policies, if we actually cared about our police officers with more than just lip service. Like, yeah. Let's truly support our police.
Yeah. I mean, it's starting with a red flag law, which again has overwhelming 80, 90% support out there in the public. And yet certain elected officials are afraid and cannot get it done. Hey, one more thing about signage. And Kristen, you and I talked about this before, that as a legislator, I authored a resolution naming the Gaylord Nelson Memorial Highway from his hometown in Polk County up to the Ashland area. That's 63, right, is the road up there. Mm-hmm. Well, at the time, you know, in 2010, we were still dealing with the Great Recession and budget shortfalls and everything else. And Chris and I had speculated about this with you once or twice, but I actually went and looked at state statutes late last week and confirmed that the language is still there, that there is no signage up marking the Gaylord Nelson Memorial Highway because it was said to me, well, the only way we're going to get this bill passed is if you put language in that says the money has to be privately raised, that there is no money in the budget for it. So I put language in that says, you know, signs will have to be, you know, raised privately. And you were there, what, last year and said you still didn't see any signage about it?
We went camping in Clear Lake, and no, I didn't see any signs whatsoever.
Yeah, it's past time to change that. So,
To recognize Gaylord Nelson's legacy and mm-hmm. what it means for the conservation movement, not only in Wisconsin but across the country.
Yeah, it's way overdue, and if we can't get it through this legislature, then maybe we do need to make more of a push to raise the funds privately. to get that noted so that people do continue to learn about Gaylord Nelson and learn about his legacy as well. Mm-hmm. Well, Selena, this has been great these past few weeks having you on. I think back to school next week for you. So, I mean, you're going to be nothing but chaos in that nice, calm, quiet house that you have right now, right?
Yeah, school orientation is this Friday and school starts on Tuesday. So okay. It'll be a, whoa. What's happening?
Well, so we'll let you get into a routine of how the school day is going to get going here and figure out when you can get in with a minimal amount of, I said I'd be right there, you know, or whatever it takes. So thank you, Selena. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Kristen, great to talk to you. Have a fun start to the week.
Yes, sir. You too.
All right. We'll see you soon. And again, it's a Motherhood Monday, so our friends from Motherhood for Good will be here next, and we'll talk about trying to keep right-wing indoctrination politics out of our schools. We'll be back. You're up north. All right, it is Motherhood Monday, and so that means Kate Duffy and Danielle Scampini-Lynn from Motherhood for Good are with us. Ladies, good morning to you.
Good morning.
We're getting there. It's last week of August, Labor Day weekend on the way. We were just talking in our last segment with Kristen Lyerly and Selena Heller about the cost of school supplies. Kate, you want to weigh in first? How's the cost of school supplies now compared to when you were young? Go.
You know, I don't have a lot to weigh in on that yet because I'm still like in the diaper zone, which is quite costly. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
I was going to say, wait a minute. Yeah. You're probably spending more than all the back to school folks, aren't you?
But I have heard from friends that, yeah, there's quite lengthy lists. There's lots of things to get. I'm always just flabbergasted by, I'm sure there's more to this story, but until I become like a school aged mom, I'm like, gosh, parents have to buy all this stuff. Teachers shouldn't have to buy it either, but should parents, like, I don't know.
Yeah, but I'm not going to leave the diaper stage here just yet because I mentioned in the last hour going to something for my niece where you had to bring diapers or wipes, and I haven't purchased diapers in, of course, forever. And this is at Target. It's like your choice is like something with like 8 diapers or 156. I mean, there's no middle ground on this stuff.
Oh, it's a big one. That's just...
I know that's like Costco delivery. Just keep ordering. Yeah.
I guess. Danielle, where are you on school supplies or diapers or what are you paying for this year?
Both actually. We've got 6, 3, and 1. So school supplies. What I noticed from my school supply years, which was always my favorite thing to do as a kid. So like it's exciting to now have it with my own kids. Mm-hmm. But the lists are very specific. Like the right size, the right number of sheets in a notebook that's also this color and all that. That is what I found the most challenging this year. I was like, how much does this really matter? Or are they just trying to be specific to help people out? I don't know. But yeah, it's definitely a whole new world from when we were kids.
Very much so. So we'll, like I said, we've got something in our newsletter coming up this week about that as well.
Oh, great.
Our topic for this week is going to be about school boards and school districts and some very troubling episodes that have come up in Wisconsin and across the country. We have seen what has happened when, you know, members of, extreme right-wing political circles get involved in things like, you know, getting U.S. Supreme Court judges appointed or, you know, pursuing other political aims. And it appears that school boards are now a part of that. And in some districts, there's been some significant changes, and not necessarily for the good, both in terms of education and the good educators that they're losing as a result. And Danielle, do you want to say more about that as we introduce our guest?
I'm in Elm Grove, so in Waukesha County, not specifically the Waukesha School District, but we're definitely noticing a big concerning shift towards right-wing extremism, kind of packaged up as like concern for the safety and well-being of kids, which is leading to like extreme politicalization of our school boards. And then obviously that has a direct effect on our schools, which we know how much time our kids spend in these schools in this very important time in their lives and how important their educators are. And if we have these extreme, school board positions that are kind of getting in the way of the job of the educators, like it's
it's not good for the educators. It's not good for our kids in the end, which is what they claim that they're trying to do to keep our kids safe. And yeah, it's just been really, it's been a really scary trend that we're seeing.
Well, and in doing so, it's costing, like I said, school districts some good teachers. Rusty Edlin is one of them from the Waukesha School District, who wrote an essay on why I quit teaching in the Waukesha School District. There was also a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel column by Ross Freshwater entitled "School Board Policies Left Me No Choice But to Leave Waukesha Schools." So clearly there's something concerning going on there, and Rusty is joining us to talk about it. Rusty, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Rusty, as far as your essay goes, as you were trying to explain to people why you could no longer teach in Waukesha, what were the overarching themes that led to that decision?
Right. So I taught in the school district of Waukesha at Waukesha South High School. I taught there for 6 years, and I would say that the first 4 years were they were some of the best I could ask for. Really supportive administration, and as a social studies teacher, I felt very much supported, not only to be trusted with the content within the classroom, but also encouraged to try new things and try to boost engagement with all that stuff. So it wasn't until after COVID and we saw this huge flip with our school board, because if we can reach back into, our memory hole about the early days of COVID, we shut down, but then the next year it became a huge debate about how do we come back. Some schools in Wisconsin went fully virtual. Waukesha decided to try a hybrid. So we would split the kids. One half of the kids would go to school like every other day, and then the other half would go the other day. We would have like two cohorts, which was actually amazing for building relationships because it meant that we never had more than 15 kids in a room at a time. And so starting that school year, we thought, well, this actually seems to work out. We can actually socially distance and all that stuff. However, those rational minds that tried to create this hybrid as a way to try to keep the kids in school and also be able to socially distance, that really rubbed some people the wrong way. And what they ended up doing was some people with unsavory views about public education in general decided to run for school board, basically promising to make sure that they send all the kids back into the schools, whether or not COVID is happening.
And then we get into the subject matter of some of the classes as well, or the large themes about, being able to discuss, the history of racism in America. And that certainly didn't sit well with many educators.
Right. Absolutely. And this was never really something that was that controversial to begin with. And we understood this as teachers in Waukesha, that we have a plurality of viewpoints within the classroom, especially because I'm dealing with high school kids. A lot of them are experiencing, they're learning about how they fit into the political world. I got some kids that are extremely conservative. I got some kids who don't know what they are. And then I got some kids that would tell you that they are communists. And it's not because they needed a teacher to make them communists. That's just what they're exploring in their viewpoints in their life. So it was my job to be able to foster healthy discussions within these classrooms while allowing everybody from any conservative, liberal, or leftist viewpoint to be able to feel like they can be heard and their voice respected. And the school board did not seem to understand or care about how teachers wanted to do that.
Well, no, because as you note here, in terms of supplemental teaching material, you wrote every article, video, political cartoon activity had to be vetted for indoctrination, and that a school official eventually told you personally about your concerns that it would cause students to disengage. And this person said to you, Rusty, your days of autonomous teaching are behind you. And that, I mean, that just had to be such a blow to any sense of trust that you thought you had.
Oh, I was flabbergasted. I was absolutely floored. I was like, I was dumbstruck instantly when that person said that. And I couldn't believe it. And I was like, that could, did that really just happen? Your days of autonomous teaching are behind you. And that was coupled with the discussion that used the indoctrination word. It's the opinion of some people that you are indoctrinating kids. And I'm just like, maybe you should come into my classroom and see what we actually do here. But it's very concerning, the amount of accusations that are made against teachers just in a blanket setting. You had mentioned Ross Freshwater's letter. If you were to go and look at Twitter, when he posted his article to Twitter, a lot of people came into his comments just absolutely berating him and trying to bully him. And there's a huge push on the conservative side that somehow teachers are the enemy of the people because they think that we are indoctrinating kids to be little Marxists or something. But unfortunately for them, it is simply not true.
Of course, yeah, of course it's not true. And of course, that's where the right wing, especially school board people, are very loud on Twitter. That's why we stick to mostly Instagram. It tends to be a kind of a friendlier crowd. I have a question. Since you're a high school teacher, I mean, obviously these kids, like you said, they're exploring, they're talking about these things. They're more aware of what's going on. This isn't elementary school we're talking about. So many people talk about the school board, the teachers. What is the kids' perception of this? How privy are they to what's going on? How do they feel about it? Did you ever have conversations with them about what was going on? I feel like they're often a voice kind of left out of this conversation, which is crazy because it's about their well-being.
Not them, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, absolutely, I can speak to that. But also, you know, when it comes down to really like controversial things that the school board wants to bring up, always feel free to go in and look and see how many kids are actually going into these school board meetings to advocate for their rights. Now, to speak specifically to what like your considerations would be about what do these students think about it? Well, there are a lot of students who just know that something's wrong with their teachers. And I think out of a sense of professionalism, mm-hmm. teachers tend not to get too deep in the weeds about it. They don't want to create more of a wedge between themselves and the community than they already have to. But kids can tell that the teachers are absolutely miserable because the classrooms are becoming more morose, or, you know, like just like the teachers don't have the spark that they need in order to inspire learning from these kids. And right. a big part of that comes from just like teachers feeling like they are burning out, or feeling, in my case, it was getting a sense that I, you know, was not trusted, and I don't like that. But kids would always be like, man, Mr. Edlund, why are the school board always trying to crack down on you? Don't they understand how good of a teacher you are? And, and you know, when you spend the time with these kids building relationships and making their voices heard and giving them space, not only to experience new things, but to also like let them fail, teach them that failure is a learning opportunity, they really begin to trust and love the teacher back. And so when a teacher is in a position to not be happy to do that job, the kids pick up on that. And so I was able to build these relationships, and then the kids are like, man, what happened to Mr. Edlund?
It sounds like somebody who knows what they're doing. We got time for one more quick question. Danielle, you want to jump in?
Sure. So I would say, you know, it is back to school season. Obviously we've got school on the brain. As we prepare for, you know, like we said, school supplies and all of that, what would you say is something that parents should be prepared for advocating for our teachers and for our students? Like, what's the best way for us to show up for our teachers?
Oh my goodness. I say that the best way to show up for your teachers is to have a direct line of communication with them via email or phone. And to also express that you support them. Any show of appreciation from parents is always definitely, you know, we take that to heart, and we love that. But stay involved as much as or more than the noisy people who are on the right that try to disrupt public education in order to create it in their own vision. So make sure that you are staying involved in school board meetings, get involved in any kind of parent-teacher organizations, get involved with alliances. In Waukesha, there's a parent-teacher alliance that are working together in order to advocate for good schools in Waukesha. So,
and yeah. go to, like Chris Hambuck Boyle is telling us through Facebook right now, go to school board meetings. Don't just go to react to something. Go, yeah. You know, be proactive and see what's going on there. The people that talk about, I need more parent input, more parents' rights. There's no shortage of ways to get involved, but you have to get involved. You have to take the initiative. There are all kinds of good people here like Rusty Edlin willing to do that. Rusty, thank you very much for sharing your story with us. We really appreciate it and wish you all the best.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Danielle, Kate, good to see you guys as well. Have a wonderful week.
You too.
All right. Thanks, and everyone. When we come back, Civic Media News Director Terry Bell will be here with three things to know from the Civic Media Newsroom to get the week started. We'll be back after this here up north. Terry Bell is here, the news director for Civic Media. Gives us all the news and information across the, it feels now like 43 stations across the Civic Media radio network. It's a smaller number, and that is a good thing, but it keeps you guys hopping, doesn't it?
Oh, my goodness, does it ever. Yeah.
I was trying to explain to somebody over the weekend. They said, well, if I've got a news tip, you know, how do I handle it? I said, well, you talk to Terry for almost anything, but then, you know, this person's your contact for the Western Wisconsin stations. This person's your contact for the Northeast Wisconsin stations. And, you know, you get to keep all those plates spinning. Lucky you.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's what I signed up for. And you have James Kelly up in Chippewa Falls, who's been there about a week now, and so anyone with news up there should contact James.
That's right. I do have to go meet James. James and I will eventually be working out of the Chippewa Falls radio station, the new one being built for WCFW and for 93.5 The Tap. The studio is furnished, all the construction's done, but you know it's a matter of getting all these places wired, you know, get the control board in, get connected to the network. And so once that comes, we'll be doing much more work from there. But yeah, James is on duty there already.
For sure. So let's talk about three things that people should know right now. First of all, one of Wisconsin's congressmen was in Syria yesterday, Scott Fitzgerald. He was part of a mission that was led by French Hill of Arkansas. He's been probably the most outspoken member of Congress in support of the opposition to the Syrian regime. What's happening over there in that part of the world now, the U.S. has always backed the opposition, but Arab allies are now starting to normalize relations with President Bashar Assad again. So this mission went over about an hour-long visit in the opposition-held part of Syria, where these three congressmen, Scott Fitzgerald, French Hill, and Ben Klein of Virginia, went to just pay a visit to some of the people heading up the opposition and the humanitarian efforts there.
I'm going to, again, beg your indulgence that sometimes you're delivering a good straight news story and then I jump in with some editorializing. And
that's what we
do. I'm going to say this one really strikes a chord with me. Syria, because there was virtually no support from a then Republican Congress for President Obama, who also did not act perfectly there, talking about a bright red line, I believe the phrase was. But then came the Trump administration. And I don't recall hearing Congressman Fitzgerald or anybody calling out Trump for completely selling out the Kurds in northern Syria and the many, many U.S. faithful U.S. allies who were slaughtered by Assad's troops when Trump did that, when he turned his back and sold them out. And so if Congressman Fitzgerald wants to have some credibility, it's more than just going to Syria. It's really speaking honestly about shortcomings, including a big one from President Trump. So I just wanted to get that note in. A little closer to home, politics involves the Wisconsin Elections Commission, and apparently Republicans this week are going to act on that as I refer to it, imaginary nomination?
Well, that's just the thing, and that's the question of whether this nomination is valid or not. There's some disagreement. Josh Call, the state's attorney general, ruled last week that the Senate really doesn't have a say in this matter. So, and this all gets back to the Prehn decision. So what happened is Megan Wolf's term, the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, her term expired earlier this summer. There was a meeting to nominate her for another term. But under the Prehn decision, in which the Wisconsin Supreme Court decided that Fred Prehn could stay on the DNR board indefinitely because no replacement for him had been chosen, the Democrats on the Elections Commission decided to abstain. So therefore, kind of creating a similar situation where her job status could be pretty much made indefinite by this sort of limbo. So,
right.
The Senate Republicans have one opinion. The Attorney General has another. And I suspect this is all going to be settled in the courts.
Which now has a, you know, progressive control to it. But again, that's no guarantee. The progressive justices may, you know, actually rule in the Senate Republicans' favor as a way to get back to what everybody thought the rules were before Republican senators conspired. We have the emails, conspired with Fred Prehn to stay on the Natural Resources Board. So there's a lot of moving parts in this, but one of them involves this Senate hearing that's coming up. The third item is about the Brewers Stadium. It is in need of repairs. It's going to be in need of upgrades. And there was a proposal from Governor Evers to do something about it. Republicans said no. And I guess amazingly, Mark Adonasio, the Brewers' principal owner, you know, he does not sound like he's despondent about this just yet.
He sounds pretty optimistic, and I think he has reason to be. I don't think it's that there's any feeling that the Brewers are making unreasonable demands or anything. Milwaukee is not Oakland right now. I should say that.
There seems to be
agreement on both sides of this debate that they want the Brewers to stay. It's just a question of how. Now, Governor Evers would have tapped into the large budget surplus that the state has to make a one-time payment to keep those repairs up. Robin Voss wants a longer, more gradual arrangement. So it's just a question of lawmakers come back this fall, and that's when there'll be more hashing of this out.
Well, I hope so, but I also get the sense that the price tag's only going to go up from here. What the governor was proposing was $290 million, and it would have kept the Brewers here for 13 years past their current lease. And, I mean, I have no qualms about guaranteeing that package price is now going to be more than $290 million. It might get the Brewers to stay longer, but this whole thing could also yet blow up. But, you know, Adonasio said we have very good chemistry. We just have to get these three constituencies, the governor, the assembly, and the Senate, to come together. And again, I appreciate his optimism. I just don't know that everything's going to be north of $300 million at this point, it seems to me.
The longer these things get kicked down the road, the more expensive they become, definitely.
Yeah, and there's going to be this talk about how much the city should put in, should Milwaukee County, should the five counties, because again, you had that five county, sales tax, you know, that was funding this thing once upon a time.
Well, yeah, and the important thing to remember is the Brewers do not own American Family Field. It's owned by this quasi-public private stadium district, which has made a commitment to pay for upkeep, and that fund is going to run out in a couple of years. So that's why there's this urgency to act now.
Yeah, and it always gets back to when they allowed the sales tax to sunset. I remember thinking at the time, okay, what's your mechanism? Because you know things break down. There's going to be future need, and you know the more you put off that solution, the higher the price tag is going to be. Terry Bell, news director from Civic Media. Thanks so much, Terry.
Thank you, Pat.
Have a great start to the day, and thank all of you for being with us as well. Remember that Up North News is a separate entity from Courier Newsroom. Let me try that again. Up North News is a separate entity from Civic Media. We are owned by Courier Newsroom, but we are so thrilled to be here on Civic Media 5 days a week. You can sign up for our daily newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. You can turn to Up North News WI for social media updates, and you can follow me on social media, Pat Kreitlow Up North, on Facebook. We'd love to have you there. We have Chad Holmes and Christina Lurie coming up on the show tomorrow. Have a great Monday. See you tomorrow.